It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Meet the Manager. Here we chat to FPL managers who have an interesting story to tell or offering new and a different insight into the game. Today on Fantasy Football Scouts Meet the Manager, I'm joined by -4 Junior on Twitter, also known as Itamal, or just Junior as well. Junior, welcome. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Happy I'm very good. Thank you. So you are currently in and around the top 25k. I think I said that I wrote that a couple of days ago.
But
very well rankings. Ahead of game week 38 in the 21-22 season. So these videos are designed for people to watch whenever, really. So they might watch in a few years' time. So just a time span that. About to come to the end of the 21-22 season. The reason we're interviewing you is because this is only your fifth season and you're a child of the chips, I've called you. You've never known anything else other than free hit planning, triple captains, and adapting your game to COVID and postponements as well.
Indeed.
What intrigues me is that across the four seasons you've completed, you've finished twice in the top 1,000 and you're heading for another strong finish as well. Tell us about, just broadly, before we get into detail, tell us about this career history that you've got, which is quite unusual. Two incredibly strong seasons. You've only been playing for 4 years.
Yeah, I've been watching the Prem since I was a kid. I'm a Liverpool fan for the past like 17 years. I had no idea about Fantasy Premier League until I backpacked in South America and I met a guy that pretty much told me, this is the game. Mm-hmm. Like if we talked about the Prem, we talked about football, and it was like, you know your stuff, try it. And I tried it. My first season, I finished just inside the top 100K. I had no idea what the chips were. Mm-hmm. I just used them whenever. Like I had like a good, Firmino game. So I just put the triple captain then. I had no idea about the double game weeks or blank game weeks or whatever. And I just winged it. And then I was, okay, it's fun.
Yeah,
I got pretty much screwed over because I didn't really know what what the chips were. So I started to take it more seriously and actually planned and actually like strategized. And it came very natural to me because I have a very strong background about the league and about the teams, which I just know well because I'm interested.
Yeah.
So FPL is what made me like...
So 2017, nevertheless, this is the season where, you know, double game weeks, chips and things, didn't really understand, but you still finished in the top 100K. I think I may have finished in the top 100K. No, actually, I might not have done. I might have done a bit better. But I've been hovering around that in recent years anyway. So it's still pretty good, I think. And then the next season, 403rd. so that's within a whisker of winning it, really. You know, when you get to that stage, next season about 2 million, and then back up 608th. Finish in 2020-21. So I just want to address the 2 million season. But basically, you were saying before, Nav, you were involved in a mini league, then you stopped being involved in mini league. So that sort of motivation had gone. So you just sort of dead ended your team.
Pretty much, yeah. And I also missed the first deadline, which was like the worst thing ever. Right. Like the very first one, like my team wasn't set up. So I think I had Salah. I think I had De Bruyne a captain the entire time, and I just never made a change from there because I thought I was going to play and then didn't. It was my last year in college as well, so took a break.
Okay. What I'm particularly interested in is this going from 100k, which is still really good for the first season, to then 403rd, and then it not being a fluke because you got broadly similar rank within a couple of years. So what are the tips of being a top 100k manager like me at the moment to being a top 1,000 manager, which you've been for 50% of your season so far?
For me, the main tips that I always try to preach also to my audience, because I'm doing a podcast in Hebrew and I get my own Israeli community.
So you're based in
Israel. So for me, I never look at you. Like ever, I'm not interested about what other people are doing.
Okay.
If I do look at EO, it's when I'm behind and I'm trying to catch catch people above me.
I just want to clarify for those that don't know, EO is effective ownership. So that takes into account captaincy, can take into triple captaincy. So you'll see things like Salah is 150% owned, but that's because people essentially own him twice as captain. Sorry, carry on.
So yeah, this is what I don't really use it pretty much at all. I just play my own game. I just pick the players that I think will do best, and captain the same. And I plan way further than pretty much anyone says to plan. Most of the people will tell you to plan like 4 or 5 weeks ahead. I usually plan like 10 to 12 weeks ahead, even though it's pretty much it's not, I wouldn't say pointless, but it gives you it never really acts as you think it will do. It doesn't really translate as you planned it, but you know the direction, and you pretty much discover unknown problems way before they actually happen. So, which is, for me, that's the game.
I mean, that's something I picked up on in previous meet the managers as well, about that sense of planning. It's something I must admit I don't do enough, and it's looking ahead. So I think in our last meet the manager video, we're looking at captaincy, and in game week one he decided the captain right up until game week 38, and that essentially looks at fixtures really as well. But you know, and it can work out with double game weeks, but it's that sort of level of planning. So you plan ahead for 12 weeks, so we're talking
pretty much.
So obviously, so say you got game week one, you're looking at game week 12. So what sort of things are you looking at when you're planning? You know, who are you going to captain in game week 11? Where there's a big fixture swing, what sort of things are you looking at?
Both the fixture swings and both pretty much the price points, which is the most important thing for me when you set up your first team. I don't usually pick necessarily the best team for game week one or for the first four game weeks or whatever, unless I do plan to wildcard. I try to, let's say I picked Madison, I don't know, for like 7.5. For me, picking Madison is like picking Barnes, picking Rafinha, picking whoever is in that price range. So I look at it at the team structure before anything else, and not only the 3-5-2 or 4-3-3 or whatever. I look at it in like 4.5, 4.5, 4.5, 6, 7. That's the way I look at it. I look more at the money aspect. I also play fairly aggressively in the first game weeks. This is what I didn't really do this season, and it really messed up my season. My end game, because I usually get to this point with a bigger budget than what I have now, which actually allows you to do the whole Son plus Kane plus Salah, all of that. This is what I would recommend.
I mean, because price points is something I've spoken about for a while, but I've sort of come unstuck with it because it is really important what you were saying there. But I think what I've done is that I haven't adapted my price points to each season. And you have to, at Game Week 1, sort of predict. So at the beginning of this season, the what could have been perhaps predicted, might not have done, but basically 3-4-3 doesn't really work. There haven't been three good strikers to field every week for a long time. Maybe one, for sure. Maybe two most weeks. So 4-4-2, 3-5-2, 4-5-1, these are the structures that we should go for. So I think the lesson, what I and perhaps others will pick up from you there, is to look carefully at Game Week 1 and think, okay, who is the Madison, the Mount, the Rafinha, who's in that price range? Who might I want in 12 weeks' time? Is that how you're looking at it, really?
Exactly.
So next season, say Haaland goes to Manchester City, suddenly there's a pricey striker. So what does that indicate for you, how you're going to be set up in Game Week 1 in the 22-23 season?
I can say pretty much with very high confidence that I will have a premium striker in my Game Week 1 team, because picking Haaland is like, for me, like picking Kane, like picking Lukaku, yeah, like picking Ronaldo.
Yeah.
Like, we got all of these guys and I can switch from them. And I will usually pick the pricier one. If Haaland will be 12-5, I will probably pick him over anybody else, unless one of them will have like stronger fixtures. And if I do pick the cheaper one, I will have enough in the bank to swap immediately.
Okay.
Like 1 million, let's say, and a bit extra for price changes as well.
See, so it's taken me a number of months this season to sort of come around to ditching a third striker. But if I'd have done that at the beginning of the season, I'd have done better. So how do you assess, what goes through your mind when you're looking at, I mean, we mentioned Haaland, so you think, right, okay, I need a premium striker slot, maybe for him, maybe for Kane, maybe whoever. But what else goes into your thought process in August before a season starts, how you're going to prepare, how are you going to assess, you know, which price points to get?
I watched the Paris season very closely. Mm-hmm. I think it's more important than people give it credit to. Because people like think, it's just pre-season, like not all the players that will actually be on the first 11 are playing. Yeah. But especially this season, when we got no like European or any national tournament at all, the pre-season will be pretty much the strongest teams that anything could actually line up. So I try to watch it very closely. It's a bit hard because the games are not really broadcasted in like TV or whatever.
Yeah.
But I try at least to keep an eye on the scores, on who assisted, who scored, and the actual lineups. It tells you far more than what people think.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess, that's something that we do at Fantasy Football Scout. There's the pre-season, we look at those pre-season matches. An example where that would have paid off, you're post Michu, aren't you, Swansea? But nevertheless, he emerged in pre-season and unknown in this country, but he was just dazzling in pre-season. Got him in. And he was essentially one of two best players that season in terms of FPL points, in terms of, you know, he was a captain contender. So that's an extreme example. Is there anything else you look at in pre-season? Because some people might be watching this this summer or maybe next summer as well before the season starts.
The actual like tactics I try to watch a lot. Like if, let's say Conte, let's say he will probably stay at Spurs, but let's say he moves to whoever.
Yeah.
Whoever he moves to, their fallbacks are now very, very tempting, whoever they will be.
So
managerial changes are one, and tactical changes, because the same manager can change different tactics and play in a certain way that actually brings people more out. We've seen it with Madison, like with Rodgers actually playing like the the three at the back or the four at the back, and how it affects Madison and Vardy and vice versa. So I try to keep an eye on that to actually understand how the team is going to play at least for the first part of the season, mm-hmm. and pick my players from there.
Okay. What about sort of money as well? And I mean that within, you know, how important it is for the value of players, because at the beginning of the season, they move a lot, and sometimes they're not moving based on whether they're any good, or perhaps if they've scored the week before, they might. So you could get a promoted side, the striker scores a brace, everyone wants to get him in. But perhaps more seasoned managers will think, ooh, well, actually, this might be a bit of an anomaly for this player and they might not be worth getting in. But nevertheless, you've got that price range there. So it can be quite volatile.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So, you know, what importance do you put on money, the value of players, how much they go up and down?
Very much so in the beginning parts of the season. Mm-hmm. And I usually play my first team, mm-hmm. not with the entire 100 million budget. I always try to keep at least like one or two. It depends on it depends on the players that I, mm-hmm. That I consider that I might be interested in getting in like game week 2, 3, okay. 4, whatever. So I will try to keep at least mm-hmm. 1 or 2 million in the bank. And it's very easy to spread your cash at the beginning of the season, because it's also, especially if you are planning an early wild card, which is pretty much always the best move, you can actually get away with a couple of 4.0 defenders on your bench or just one keeper. So I try to do that.
Okay.
So I'll be as flexible as I can.
Rightio. What about your attitude to hits? You're okay with hits at the beginning of the season. Do you sort of stay away from hit taking towards the end of the season, or do you not mind? I mean, I try and take about 8 a season if I can. This season I've failed remarkably at that, but nevertheless, that's the aim. What's your sort of usual average hits in a season?
Usually I don't really take a lot of hits. This season I did, previous season as well, because of COVID cases and postponements and whatever. I try to keep it to a minimum, because mm-hmm. I like to give players a run. If I actually sign the player and I got him in, I usually get him in for at least 4 or 5 game weeks. Mm-hmm. So doing the whole hokey-cokey, like between Salah to KDB to Son to whatever, I usually stay away from that, mm-hmm. And actually try to set up a team that don't really need much moving.
And I
really take every transfer as a -4. Okay. Like I really look at it this way. Like every transfer I made, it's -4, and I need to justify it for me to actually like push the button.
That's really interesting. The sort of preciousness of each transfer. In terms of your captaincy, do you have particular favourites or types of players that you like to go for?
For me, I usually keep my captaincy in the midfield. Mm-hmm. This season, I did captain the couple of defenders, whether it's Trent, Cancelo, mm-hmm. Luis James, whatever. But I usually try to keep it on the midfielder. I very rarely will captain a striker. It will probably only be Kane, if mm-hmm. I'm completely honest.
Okay.
And I usually try, because the points metrics are, it's not equal. It favors the midfielders heavily. Now, this season, we've seen with Cancelo and Trent, that and Reece James as well, that they could get like huge holes as well. But I think the like a couple of weeks ago, Reece James had like a man of the match appearance, and he ended the game with 2 points. It usually doesn't happen with midfielders. So it's the much safer option. I feel like this season the more explosive options were actually, in some cases, in the defense. But I usually stick to the midfield.
And in terms of sort of underlying stats, we talk about these a lot on some, a lot of our videos, like the Scoutcast. And do you look at those, you know, in conjunction with other things, you know, just basically watching games, but also, yeah, are there any particular stats you look at, like expected stats or, you know, shots in the box, that type of thing?
Yes, I'm a big stats guy. I'm a big data guy.
Okay.
The expected points or expected assists, expected goals, I usually cross them between two metrics. Okay. I usually use Understat and FBref. They have very, they are the two ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. Understat doesn't take into account the position of the goalkeeper or the defense. They just take into account the ball, whatever, that's it. And FBRF are taking like huge amounts of data into account, and it could be good on one side, but it could be very bad on another hand. So I try to cross both of them and to actually get a data that is more accurate for me. Now, looking at expected data is, for me, I think it's less beneficial if you don't have the background on the player.
Okay.
Because if we look at Youngmin Son, for example, you got like, I don't know, expected goals of like 13, 14, whatever the season, and scored 21, and it's not, it's supposed to happen because he provides this sort of delta is pretty much his entire career.
Yeah.
So you need to also know the background about the player, because if Mane has like an XG of 20, he will probably end the season with 18.
I mean, definitely with Son, if he can get two big chances, chances are that's two goals. But another player, chances are that might be two missed chances that you would have. And I know I've been full foul of that before. You look at the data, if you haven't had a chance to look at the match, you think, well, actually, that player wasn't that good. When you look at them, they look a bit shaky or something. Interesting. What other tips would you give in terms of FPL? You know, just in general about playing it, you know, how it affects our moods and...
I would say if you are taking if it affects you heavily, if it affects your mood like heavily, you should probably step away, because FPL does have some addictive qualities to it, and it can be very fun, but it could be unhealthy as well.
Okay.
So you need to give it the respect it deserves. And for me, like, when it stops being fun, you should probably step away, and there's always the next season. Like, whether if you did good or bad, when you finished, I finished like last season, I finished first in Israel. Yeah. I was stoked. Now I'm bummed out.
Was that the 2018-19 season? Was that when you finished? Did you finish first in Israel that season?
No, I finished. I finished first when I finished like 608th overall,
and
when I finished 403rd,
so
I finished last, first.
You're the reigning Israeli champion of FPL.
Yeah, at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. I would have introduced you with that if I'd have known. That's remiss of me.
We're a small country.
Well, I just assumed there'd be more. But then again, you know. Wow. Okay. Well done, reigning champion.
Thank you.
That principle out looking next season, you can do that with each game week. I do that with each game week. I mean, if I'm having a bad game week, I just switch off from that game week. But that's not a switch off from the game. I can just switch off from that game week, and then I just put the next screen up and then have a look at that, and then start thinking about the transfers I could make. So I guess that is a good way of doing it, whether it's by season or each week. I've got in your notes here, you're saying having the best team possible is the only differential you need. What do you mean by that?
For me, like, there's a lot of noise. Like, you would see, like, I don't know, I need to get this guy instead of this guy because more people have this guy. The only differential there is picking the best players. Mm. The only one. Like, right. If we look at the best players in each, like, game week or, like, let's say portion of game weeks, like 4 or 5 game weeks, people who actually had the best players will do the best. It's not, we are trying to overcomplicate something that is very much simple. We don't need a differential to go up the ranks, because also a lot of people are looking for those differentials and actually go down the ranks.
So
I try to, this season for me, the goal is always top 1K and always try to improve my previous season. In the recent couple of game weeks, the unfortunate events that happened, I understood that unless I will do something very, very extreme, I wouldn't get it.
Okay.
So I tried actually to go with the very big differentials, like Tavares, like whatever, doesn't work. And there's a reason why it doesn't work. So it just amplified that feeling for me even more.
Yeah. I think that goes back to your earlier point about planning as well. And it's difficult. This is what intrigues me about you playing, because for the last two or three, you've only known COVID and postponements and double game weeks every other week. And so you've only known that. So you're not clouded by anything else, which I think is probably why you're doing so well a lot of seasons. What do you think with the planning as well? So say, for example, the game week that's coming up. So we'll look at game week 38 in a sec. But so there's issues around, say, Salah. He might start, he might not start. So that's a decision to be made, because if it's looking like he might or might not start, you're never going to know. And he could play and get a hat trick. He might not play at all. And the decision to be made is to swap him out. How do you make that decision about taking the risk to say there's not enough information, I'm going to just take a risk and make an aggressive move, get a, you know, Mane in or KDB or Son or, you know, another explosive player in? What goes through your mind when you're making that sort of risk v reward judgment call on a major player?
This one is a bit different because it's the last game week of the season, and I don't really look, and I don't really need to look like further than this game week. So I'll actually, like, I'll go for it. I usually prefer to go for it, because even if I go for it and it doesn't work, at least I could say, like, I tried.
Yeah.
When the opposite goes and you don't go for it and it does plays out, then you are, like, really bummed out because you didn't really went for it. So for me, I do try to, and I will probably swap out Salah for this game week, because I don't really feel like he will play.
Okay, well, let's have a look at game week 38. I'm going to run through, just for the benefit of those listening to the podcast, I'm going to run through the team and then you tell me what issues you've got there. So you've got Pickford in goal, plays Arsenal. You've got Alexander-Arnold and Matip, who play Wolves. You have Reece James, who plays Watford for Chelsea. You've got Salah as your captain, tentatively against Wolves. Saka for Everton. Rafinha, Mount, and Nketiah, Pukki and Kane as your vice captain. And then on your bench, you've got Saar, Gordon, Tavares and Diaz, who probably won't play because of injury. So what are your main issues you're considering there?
For me, the main issues are Salah, who wouldn't stay. It will 99% be Son, which I will captain. And I might go even a bit further and take a hit to swap out Diaz for Sessegnon and actually bench Pukki.
Okay.
The only things that clash for me is the Pickford and Nketiah pick, which I might swap out, I might not, I'm not really sure yet.
Okay.
But I'm good with that.
Okay.
For me, I just want the triple Spurs against Norwich is a big differential, and I think this game could go like two ways only. If they get the first goal early, I think it's a freshening. I think they will go like 4 or 5 up.
Okay.
But if they get nervous and they go to like 60 minutes without scoring and start to stress a bit, they might actually lose it because they do have an history of bottling it.
So your captain could be Kane, or it could be whoever you get in for Salah if he's not playing.
Indeed, it will probably be Son.
Okay, and Son would be the captain over Kane.
Yeah.
Okay, and why is that? Is that she simply gets more points as a midfielder, or do you think Golden Boot is coming into it?
I think both. I think the Golden Boot thing is a very good shout because. Yeah. If Salah isn't playing, which I really assume he wouldn't play because I don't think Liverpool are... Mm-hmm. I don't think we actually need him to win this one. So I think he will rest to be 100% for Madrid. So for me, I think that if... For me, it's very simple. Like, if Son and Kane both get a goal and an assist, Son is probably like 4 or 5 points up on Kane.
Okay.
This is the only way. Okay.
So you're currently it's right. You're around about the 25K mark at the moment. So what's the ambition with the moves that you're proposing there? Do you try and get as high as you can, or I mean, it sounds like a silly thing to say as high as you can. Top 10K might be slightly out of reach, but do you harbour thoughts of that maybe?
Could be. It depends on this game week as well, mm-hmm. because I do have Richarlison captain. I'm on a free hit.
Right.
So I might go a bit closer to the 20K mark, and then I might be tempted to actually go against Son and maybe Captain Mount or with James for the higher differential. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the only objective is to finish as high as I can.
Okay.
Once the top 1K is pretty much done and dusted.
Yeah.
So I will probably try to edge it to the top 10K if I do have a shout.
Okay, excellent. Just before we go, is there just anything else you would like to add, really, about, to offer our viewers and listeners some advice around FPL?
More advice about FPL, I would say just take it, like, easy.
Yeah.
Like, there's always the next season and try to learn from your mistakes because... the easiest thing is to say, well, I got unlucky there, this one got injured, this guy didn't score like a pen, or the ref didn't blow the whistle. But once you actually take a look at your season, you will see tons of mistakes. Yeah. I do every season, like even the seasons when I finished top 1K, I had tons of mistakes. And try to pick them and actually understand why you made them is what will make you a better FPL player and a better strategist. It's the same principles for pretty much everything. FPL is a microcosmos of pretty much anything that it's strategy related.
Okay, that's great advice. Genia, thanks so much for joining us. Some really good advice there. This is a lot I'm going to take on board myself. Particularly, I've been championing price points all these years, and it's been my undoing. but I'm determined to refine that. And so thanks a lot for your advice there. And thanks so much for joining us. Good luck with the game week. Good luck with the rest of your season.
Thank you very much.